I'm Ashley Legasic.
And I'm Catherine DeClercq.
And we make up CTV's newest podcast, Life Unmasked.
We'll bring you everything you need to know about exactly how we're going to return to normal life post-pandemic.
New episodes come out every Thursday morning on iHeartRadio, and they're available on all streaming platforms later in the day.
We hope you'll tune in.
They are the discussions taking place within these walls that could open or close doors for millions of people across Ontario. But the province's plans for proof of vaccination are proving precarious. Good evening. On a day when many were waiting for a passport proposal, silence from Queen's Park.
The premier himself rejecting the initial idea, concerned over its reach. CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is live with more on this. Colin.
Well, Michelle, another day, another quagmire at Queen's Park. Premier Doug Ford and his cabinet minister sat down yesterday afternoon to have a discussion about vaccine certificates. They could not come up with a consensus, Premier Doug Ford rejecting the proposals on the table, specifically on how they would be enforced. So the premier gathered his cabinet again this afternoon, but again, they could not come up with any consensus on vaccine certificates. So Premier Ford and his cabinet will meet once again this evening at 8 o'clock to hopefully have the third time will be the vaccine certificate chart. For the second straight day, Premier Doug Ford met with his cabinet to discuss what's become a controversial topic for the Ford government, a certificate to prove your vaccine status. The government first confirmed on Friday that it would introduce a vaccine certificate this week. But sources tell CTV News the initial proposal to cabinet yesterday was rejected by Premier Doug Ford himself, who was unhappy with the plan and how far-reaching it would be, sending the government back to the drawing board as COVID-19 cases continue to rise.
I don't know why Doug Ford is yet again laid off the mark. I mean, they should have had a plan in place already. They should be at the point where they're implementing that plan right now. And apparently they're in, you know, pitched political discussions about the vaccine passports.
The last-minute rejection by Premier Ford triggered a flurry of cancellations today. A news conference that was supposed to be held today was scrapped. An internal health briefing for members of the Ford government was also cancelled. And most significantly, the Chief Medical Officer of Health called off his weekly news conference today, citing the government's ongoing work on the vaccine certificate.
So they're letting politics rule the day once again instead of public health. It's shameful.
What we do know is the province is leaning towards a QR code system to prove vaccination status. What is still in question is whether it would be provincially mandated or whether it would be up to individual businesses to enforce it.
It needs to provide legal protections to small businesses, to healthcare institutions and others who are charged with enforcing the vaccine certificate program. Because there likely will be pushback.
Critics say the government has to be clear.
What we're hoping to see is details of the framework, including the guidance that goes along with it. This is going to be critically important.
It is unclear when the province will unveil the pass, increasingly seen as the key to reducing the spread of the fourth wave.
And the fourth wave is front and center on the Ford government's mind, so much so that they're extending paid sick leave benefits to employees across this province. The government had introduced new legislation earlier this year that would give employees 3 days of paid sick leave if they had to test or isolate due to COVID-19. That was set to expire September 25th. It is now going to be extended until December 31st. Reporting live, I'm Colin DeMello. Now back to you.
Thank you, Colin. And straight ahead, ensuring a vaccine passport is available for everyone to access. Concerns some could be left behind when the plan is finally unveiled.
Looking at the newest COVID-19 case counts, Public Health Ontario reporting 525 new cases in its most recent update. 434 of those cases are among people who either are not fully vaccinated or their vaccination status is unknown. Nearly 20,000 tests have been processed in the last 24 hours, and Ontario's positivity rate is sitting at 3.1%.
Here's the situation in intensive care. There are 158 people with COVID-19 in Ontario ICUs. The province says 83 of those patients are unvaccinated, 8 partially vaccinated, and 10 are fully dosed. The remainder of those patients have unknown vaccination statuses. It is the basketball facility already at the center of a large contact tracing effort.
And tonight, more cases of COVID-19 are linked to tournaments at the Durham building. CTV's Mike Walker is live in Oshawa with more. Mike.
Well, Zariah, the Durham Region Health Department has linked 7 COVID-19 cases to 2 other tournaments that were held here at the playground earlier this month. Officials say with a lack of contact information, they're urging anyone who attended the tournaments to get tested. 7 COVID-19 cases have been linked to 2 more youth basketball tournaments held at the playground facility in Oshawa this month. Durham public health officials say they are struggling to contact players and spectators who attended.
We want to ascertain how many cases there are as quickly as possible so that we can contain the outbreaks.
The cases connected to the Canadian youth basketball tournament that was held from August 13th to the 15th. So far, there are 3 cases in Durham and Peel regions. Another 4 cases are linked to the Last One Standing tournament, which occurred from August 20th to the 23rd. Those cases have been confirmed in Toronto, York Region, Simcoe Muskoka, and Durham Region. The tournaments were held before Durham Public Health declared a COVID-19 outbreak at the Jane and Finch Classic last week. At least 25 COVID-19 cases in Ontario and Quebec are connected to the event that was held from August 3rd to the 8th.
We became aware of these tournaments after our investigation.
Durham's top doctor says the facility operator and tournament organizers did not follow COVID-19 protocols, including screening, masking, and contact tracing.
I think a lot of it could have been prevented had they followed the rules.
The reason for this problem is that we've got unvaccinated people coming to these large events, which is just, you know, not wise.
This health expert says outbreaks like this heightening the need for vaccine mandates or certificates amid rising case counts.
What we're worried about and what's happening is a very steep increase leading into the fall, which is, of course, going to be really concerning and you know, going to force us to take action.
Parents with children attending camps at the facility say they are surprised but not concerned.
Well, my son wears a mask coming in and out. On the court, it's difficult, so he's not really masked up then. But without parents around, I mean, it's just the kids interacting with one another.
In a statement to CTV News, the playground says, safety is our main focus. We strive to ensure our facilities are safe and operable for all our renters. We are working with public health and our tenants to find a safe way for sports to continue, not only in our facility, but all spaces where sports can take place. The health department has issued an order suspending future tournaments at the venue until further notice. We also reached out to tournament organizers for comment, but have not yet received any responses. Local health officials say they are still waiting to approve a workplace safety plan before tournaments can resume here. Reporting live in Oshawa, Mike Walker. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Mike. 680 more cases are considered resolved across the province, raising that total to more than 550,000 over the course of the outbreak. 5 more deaths are linked to the virus, although the province does note 3 of those deaths happened more than 2 months ago and are now included as part of a data catch-up. 9,503 lives have been lost to COVID-19 here in Ontario.
Tonight's regional breakdown includes 120 new cases in the city of Toronto, with 60 in Peel Region and 42 in Hamilton. There are 41 new cases in Niagara Region, with 30 in York Region. Durham Region has 19 new cases and 14 in Halton.
Across the province, nearly 83% of eligible people have now received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine, and more than 76.2% of eligible people have received both doses. That represents more than 9.9 million people. And for those still without a shot, health officials are doing what they can to make the process as convenient as possible. CTV's Natalie Johnson is live with more. Natalie.
Well, Michelle, the city has been moving away from the mass vaccination clinic model for a few weeks, but now it is really shifting its resources to these hyper-local mini-clinics, and you're going to start seeing more of them in places like grocery stores and parks. Over the next few weeks, there will be hundreds of them.
Joe Gomes was on the TTC when he saw this sign, a pop-up COVID-19 vaccination clinic inside Victoria Park Station.
So you're thinking now about going in?
Yeah, I'm thinking about getting a shot, yeah.
He had not yet had any doses of the vaccine, but after watching the clinic operate for a few minutes and talking to staff, made up his mind.
Yeah, I'm doing for sure.
His first shot done, in and out in 20 minutes.
If you put these clinics in the right spot at the right time, people, many for the first time, will come out to get vaccinated.
It is the theory that worked for many people here today.
A lot of people procrastinate, right? So the fact that I seen this here, I was like, I'll take the convenience and I'll just get my vaccine, right?
Everything is feeling good.
Severino Oquendo got his second shot ahead of a trip to the Philippines with the help of his son.
Accessibility is the way to go, right? So the fact that we can have people, you know, on the way to work or even after work, take a vaccine, I think that's super important.
The city says this kind of clinic is the next phase of its vaccination strategy, although it has already had mobile vaccination sites in transit stops, places of worship, and schools. Those efforts will now ramp up. 200 mobile clinics every week will move into grocery stores, malls, parks, sports venues, rec facilities, and more.
I know it can seem hard to believe that some people who want a shot still haven't got one, but that's exactly what we're seeing. For many Torontonians, the issue remains access, not opposition to vaccines.
There's a lot of traffic that goes through the system, and so people, you know, they might think twice and say, okay, let me just go and get it done.
That was the case for Natalie Bird, who was unsure for many months whether she wanted to get the vaccine.
Just, you know, doing a lot of thinking, a lot of things going through my head.
But then decided that today it was the right move. Her message to others who are hesitant.
Take the vaccine.
Glad she said she made up her mind and is now one dose down.
And the city is also looking to put more mini vaccination clinics in community organizations and workplaces, asking community leaders and employers to reach out to Toronto Public Health if they are interested in hosting a clinic. Reporting live, I'm Natalie Johnson. Sarada, over to you.
Thank you, Natalie. Michelle Jobin is next with a look at our current conditions. Michelle, lots of sunshine, not a lot of humidex. Pretty ideal today.
Yeah, absolutely, Zoraida. I have the pleasure of delivering a pretty great forecast this week. And taking a look at the satellite and radar imagery behind me, not a lot to show you. We are not looking at showers or thunderstorms throughout the region. A little bit of cloud cover, and that's what we'll play back and forth with in the next 48 hours. In fact, more sunshine on the way, especially as we get later into the day tomorrow. Right now, temperatures like this throughout the region, mid-20s, feeling into the upper 20s. So minimal humidity, bit of a breeze out of the north. Currently at the airport, it is 23 degrees, feeling like 25, and on the islands, 24, feeling like 27, going for an overnight low of 16 degrees, and a pretty great day on the way for you tomorrow with a high of 25 degrees. I'll be back with your full forecast in just a little bit. Michelle?
Thank you. The body of a missing boater has been recovered in Oakville. Search efforts for 80-year-old Robert Wiles began last Thursday when Marine officers noticed his empty boat in the area of 16 Mile Creek. Extensive search efforts began a short time later but were scaled back over the weekend. Halton police say Wiles' body was found this morning near Bronte Harbor.
We have new details tonight about the Sunday afternoon shooting at Yorkdale that sent the shopping mall into lockdown.
After further investigation and further review, it was determined that there was two groups that had exchanged rounds and exchanged shots between them. Group one consisted of one male subject and one female subject. Group two consisted of three male parties.
The alleged man and woman described in that first group have now been arrested. A 22-year-old man and 29-year-old woman facing multiple weapons-related charges. Officers previously arrested a 21-year-old man on Sunday, believed to be part of that second group in the brazen exchange of gunfire inside the mall. No one was seriously hurt.
Still to come, we're just hours away from a permanent shutdown impacting drivers who take the Gardner. A full breakdown of all you need to know to navigate this new construction. But overseas now, and after two decades of war, Afghanistan's future remains uncertain. Only now, the Taliban is in complete control.
Canadian armed forces evacuated 3,700 people from the country, but with the military no longer there, the safety of those left behind remains in doubt. CTV's Brahim Ladani joins us in studio now with Canada's efforts. Brahim.
Well, Zoraida and Michelle, Canada has agreed to resettle 5,000 Afghan refugees who were evacuated by U.S. troops, and that will go towards the 20,000 number the government previously committed to. But the concern now is for the safety of the more than 1,200 registered Canadians and permanent residents still trapped.
Celebratory gunshots ring through Afghanistan. The Taliban rejoicing
as the final U.S. troops leave the country. I congratulate the whole nation because we have achieved our independence and we were able to force the Americans to leave after 20 years of jihad and sacrifice. Smiling while holding rifles, Kabul's airport is now in complete control of the Islamic militia, seemingly stronger than it was in 2001 when the war began.
I don't trust them. They're going to have to continually demonstrate every day that they have changed. They are willing to work with the international community.
At least 1,250 Canadians and permanent residents are still stuck inside Afghanistan. Ottawa says the Taliban has agreed to let them leave, but it hasn't happened.
We are going to continue to pull out all of the stops that are necessary to get them here. And that includes issuing documents that clearly communicate that they are permitted to travel to Canada.
In the United States, the end of the two-decade war is being called a mission of mercy.
We had no vital interest in Afghanistan other than to prevent an attack on America's homeland and our friends. And that's true today. We succeeded in what we set out to do in Afghanistan over a decade ago.
Meanwhile, the Taliban has declared victory and intends to open diplomatic relations with countries around the world.
But it remains to be seen whether they can translate their rhetoric of moderation, inclusivity, you know, good relations with the outside world, translate those words into effective practice. There's a lot of room for skepticism.
As the world waits to see what life looks like under Taliban rule.
Now, Ottawa is advising those still in Afghanistan to stay put for now because of the uncertain situation. But Canada's Minister of Foreign Affairs says he's working with bordering countries such as Pakistan to let people with Canadian documentation in. Reporting live, I'm Raheem Ladani. Zoraida and Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Raheem. Turning to the federal election campaign now, a new polling giving us a glimpse at voters here in the GTA.
The Nanos Research commissioned by CTV News and CP24, and here's what it shows. Across the GTA, the Liberals hold 44% support compared to 33% for the Conservatives. The NDP has 17% support, with the Green Party and People's Party both with 4%.
Breaking that down by area code, here's the 416. The Liberals sitting at 44% support compared to 32% for the Conservatives. The New Democrats have 19%, the People's Party has 3%, and the Greens have 2%.
In the 905, the Liberals have 41% support, while the Conservatives have 33%, the NDP at 15% support, while the People's Party has 6%, and the Greens have 5% support.
Respondents were also asked about their preference for Prime Minister. Across the GTA, Justin Trudeau sits at 38%, with Erin O'Toole at 28%. Jagmeet Singh is at 16%, Maxime Bernier at 3%, and Annamie Paul at 2%.
That question was also narrowed by region. In the 416, Justin Trudeau has 39% support, with Erin O'Toole at 28%, Jagmeet Singh at 18%, with Maxime Bernier at 3%, and Annamie Paul sitting at 2%.
And in the 905, Justin Trudeau is at 37% support, while Erin O'Toole has 29%. Jagmeet Singh is at 15% support, Maxime Bernier and Annamie Paul both at 3%. And Bloc Québécois leader Yves-François Blanchet also appears on the list with 1% support. The data was collected from 502 voters in the GTA between August 22nd and August 29th. The margin of error is 4.4 percentage points, 19 times out of 20.
With that in mind, we are nearly at the halfway point of the campaign, and the leaders are giving voters a lot to digest.
Today, pledges on health care, balancing the budget, and making life more affordable. CTV's Heather Butts has the details.
You're a real pro at it now, going into grade four.
Amid growing fears about the fourth wave of the pandemic as unvaccinated children go back to school, Justin Trudeau is putting the spotlight on mental health.
A Liberal government will invest almost $6.5 billion. For mental health services across the country. And we'll make this investment through a brand new, dedicated Canada Mental Health Transfer to provinces and territories.
Most of that money, $4.5 billion, goes to provinces and territories over 5 years. $1.4 billion for co-developed mental health and wellness strategies with Indigenous partners. It'll help hire 1,200 new mental health counselors to increase access at colleges and universities and fund a national three-digit mental health crisis and suicide prevention hotline. The Conservative Party has committed $60 billion over 10 years for health care and has promised to balance the books within a decade. Today, Erin O'Toole was asked how he would get there.
We will help highly affected sectors caught by this pandemic so that those jobs are preserved. We will grow the economy so that we can get back to balance in a responsible and equitable way without cuts.
The NDP is again making promises to cool down the hot housing market, pledging to boost the taxable portion of capital gains from 50 to 75%. It will not apply to the sale of a primary residence, registered investment, or small business.
This is strictly about getting at people who aren't living in their homes, they're using it to make money. That's what we're trying to get at. And to do that, we are going to increase the capital gains tax to make it happen.
The Green Party leader is promoting urban agriculture as a way to ensure food security for those in need and reduce our reliance on imports.
The Green Party is calling for us to replace one-third of our imports with domestic production.
As we head into the back half of this pandemic election, both the Liberal and Conservative leaders' messaging was geared towards recovery, with the NDP and Green Party focused on affordability. Heather Butts, CTV News, Toronto.
And you can follow every moment of this campaign as we approach Election Day on September 20th. Follow our coverage at election.ctvnews.ca.
Hurricane Ida is now being blamed for the deaths of at least four people. The storm has moved on, but hundreds of thousands remain without power and water in Louisiana.
A massive cleanup now underway is expected to be lengthy and costly. Tonight, CTV's Todd Battis is in one of the many communities hard hit by the hurricane.
This is a neighborhood in LaPlace, Louisiana, not unlike many neighborhoods in this community that have been utterly devastated by the wind and rain and storm surge of Hurricane Ida. As you can see, it's extremely difficult to get through here. They got about 3.5 to 4 feet of water in every single one of these homes. Lake Pontchartrain is not far from us, about 2 kilometers down the road, and it broke its banks and sent water pouring through here. They say they live by the swamp. Well, now they live in it. Take a look at this. This was a home that thought they had done the right thing and built up their foundation high enough, much higher than many of these other low-lying homes, with a high concrete foundation. You can protect against flooding, but you can't protect against the wind, and that's obviously the case there. We talked to Cody Robichaud, the owner of this home. This is the second time this home has flooded out. They're hauling out everything, their furniture, their appliances. Essentially, they have to start over. All the walls need to be ripped out. And Cody tells me, much like other people here in the area, that the difficulty is going to be living without power, living without water for weeks, perhaps as little as 3 weeks and as long as who knows. We spoke to a gentleman who works in recovery and repair, and he said it could be a year before you can get a contractor to come in these places to do the necessary work. And the story is the same from here all the way to New Orleans. There are millions of people who are without power. There's hardly a power line that's standing. If it is, it certainly isn't working. So it's a monumental task, one of which U.S. President Joe Biden has released an incredible sum of money to help begin the repair and restoration, but it's going to be a very long time, and people are going to be suffering in this part of Louisiana for quite a while.
Todd Battis, CTV News.
In California, a large firefighting force is gathering to defend a popular vacation spot from a raging wildfire.
Homes are threatened and our community is threatened, and I never thought that that was possible.
The blaze has grown quickly and is getting closer to Lake Tahoe, prompting evacuations. Strong winds have pushed the Calder Fire across two major highways, burning mountain cabins as flames swept into the Tahoe Basin. Flames have scorched more than 770 square kilometers since breaking out 2 weeks ago. In neighboring Nevada, the governor has declared a state of emergency because of a high risk the blaze could burn into his state.
Back here at home, ramping up work that could slow down your drive. The major construction project on the Gardner set to last years. CTV's Janice Golding is live with more. Janice.
Hi, Michelle. Right now, you're seeing the typical rush hour traffic, but motorists tell us that they are prepared for much longer commutes come tomorrow, given the Logan Avenue ramps be shutting down permanently in just a few hours.
Starting at 9 p.m. tonight, the busy Logan Avenue ramps are being shut down for good as the city proceeds with the Gardner Expressway Rehabilitation Plan. Not particularly welcome news to commuters we spoke with this afternoon.
It's going to be really hard. I commute to Oakville every day for work, so it's going to add quite a bit of time. I don't know what they're going to do, where all the traffic is going to go.
The plans have been in the works since 2016 as the city proceeds with a hybrid option, which is expected to make connecting to the DVP simpler and less convoluted. New ramps will be constructed further north, and new Cherry Street access ramps are also planned. The Lakeshore Bridge will also be re-engineered, with the city saying it will be lengthened and widened over the Don River to accommodate bike lanes, paths for pedestrians, and a new linear park. This should also support the renaturalization of the Don River, which city planners say will be critical for future flood protection. All in all, a large-scale, lengthy project which commuters say they're dreading.
I think this has always been one of the longest parts of the commute, so I think it will add quite a bit. Half hour, at least.
Give me an extra half hour drive.
So you're not happy?
What can you do? They gotta do it.
This afternoon, Waterfront Toronto did release information about how people can navigate the closures with explanations on some of the commonly requested routes available online.
Yeah. All of the road work is expected to be completed by 2024. Reporting live, I'm Janice Golding. Now back to Michelle.
Thank you, Janice. And still ahead, addressing learning loss as kids go back to class. We hear the apprehension straight from students and some of the plans in place to help everyone succeed this school year.
Well, it's looking like a great day to be outside tomorrow, looking for a high of 25 degrees with minimal humidity, lots of sunshine, a little bit more in the afternoon than in the morning. Some cloud cover there. We've got a breeze. One thing we haven't got quite as much of in the last little while is rainfall, because we're actually sitting below our monthly average for August. Now, a lot of people have felt like we got a lot, and certainly a lot all fell on one day, but we only had 57.4 millimeters so far. Average is 78.1. So things are a little bit dry for the lawns and gardens, and certainly the farms at this point, hoping for a more average in September. I'm going to be back with your full forecast in 2 minutes.
Before we get to the weather, we have some very exciting developments to share tonight. Many of you have been asking about Lindsay Morrison, and there is some happy baby news to report to you tonight. Meet Charlie.
Aww.
Lindsay and Alistair's 7-pound baby boy was born on Friday, happy and healthy and adorable.
Yeah, he is so cute. We are thrilled to share these beautiful pictures of Charlie and mom, who's also doing great, by the way. Now, I think if you remember, we told you last week that Lindsay's last day before maternity leave was last Wednesday. It was also her due date, and Charlie must have known it because labor began the following day.
And congratulations to Lindsay and her husband, Alistair. There they are. There's a brand new family. We can't wait to meet Charlie when the time comes. And Lindsay tells us she is so thankful for all the well wishes and the messages of support from all of you CTV viewers. And technically, he was in studio with us for 9 months, he's already part of the CTV family, and we're in love with him.
Yeah, totally. He knew it. Perfect timing, impeccable timing for little Charlie, and just when we thought we couldn't get enough sunshine today, Michelle.
That's right. I mean, he's just absolutely adorable, and we're so excited for Lindsay. I'm so happy to hear this news. This is a tough act to follow, but I have a pretty good forecast that I think you will like to hear, so we're going to get right into that. Weather is brought to you by Trane for home comfort, cooling, and clean air. It's hard to stop a train. Like I said, we have a great forecast on the way for you. Seasonal temperatures, a lot of sunshine on the way. Let's take a look at how things are right now throughout the region. We're at 23 degrees, feeling like 25 in Toronto. A really comfortable week ahead for all of us after that heat and humidity that we had really extending right into Monday. Things are feeling much cooler today. I don't know about you, but I really experienced that really nice breeze this morning as I headed outdoors, and it was pretty welcome, even though I generally like the real intense summer heat. There was a kind of a welcome change. 16 degrees is our overnight low in Toronto. We were really quite warm in the overnight lows, which was what was characterizing that stretch of really hot weather. 21, 22 degrees, feeling like 31 degrees. So this is much more comfortable for sleeping. And you'll notice I see single-digit temperatures heading up towards Bancroft. So tomorrow is September 1st. It is the first day of meteorological fall. And, you know, fall is really on the way for all of us. So maybe those single-digit temperatures starting to signal that. Certainly the breeze that we're experiencing is. But we are looking at really warm, comfortable conditions for tomorrow as well. 25 degrees, feeling like 27. It's really what's on tap for the rest of the week. A little bit cooler as you head further to the north with not really any humidity to describe at all at this point. Looking at our satellite and radar imagery, not a lot to show you because we are experiencing just a little bit of cloud cover here and there. More cloud cover in the morning for you tomorrow. Then we get into the afternoon. And then for late Wednesday into Thursday, things are going to be very clear. In fact, that's going to help us make feel a little bit cooler overnight. Down to the south here, you see the leading edge of the remnants of Ida moving through. And that's not really going to affect us in terms of moisture at all. It's going to be a weather maker for the Maritimes. We have this high pressure steering it off to the east, and that is good news for us, but 30 to 60 millimeter rain for those of us in Halifax, for example, if you're headed that way. So forecast radar looking like this, a little bit of cloud cover along the lower Great Lakes in the morning, but that's about it. And then we clear out very nicely. It's looking like a very clear day for Thursday, a little bit more cloud cover moving in later in the day. So 25 for tomorrow to kick off September, 24 for Thursday, abundant sunshine through the end of the week, little chance of showers Sunday, Monday, into Tuesday, and we have a little bit more humidity for the weekend. But all in all, a great week ahead. Back to you, Michelle.
Thank you. Well, news that Ontario is considering a vaccine passport as a requirement for many non-essential services has advocates watching closely.
Most such passports require technology on smartphones to work. And as CTV's John Woodward reports, some are worried they'll get left behind.
For Clive Caldwell at the private Cambridge Fitness Center in downtown Toronto, implementing a vaccine check for his members was a clear decision.
Everyone has to be vaccinated to return. And that has been the most important thing I think we've done in the last while.
Club members sign up online, just as many people do in government systems in Quebec and Manitoba. A QR code on the phone could be enough to get you into a non-essential service. But for those without phones or with older phones, it's not so simple.
This is a relatively new iPhone. I was able to download Quebec's vaccine passport app onto it, no problem. And this is a 15-year-old flip phone. It can still text and make phone calls, but downloading a vaccine passport app, that's not going to happen.
A technological barrier that could prevent groups, including the elderly or the homeless, from accessing some services.
If all retail food services locations, right, or major ones, were to say, you can't come into our restaurant unless you're vaccinated. Well, all of a sudden, there's a whole lot of people that may not be able to go in and access those services or even that respite or that warmth in the case of a homeless person.
Angie Peters of the Yonge Street Mission says the government has to consider people who don't have access to smartphones or printers if it designs a vaccine passport. In Manitoba, an immunization card alternative has proved so popular, the government ran out of plastic to print it on. In Quebec and BC's planned card, printing the code onto paper works too. Disability advocates also concerned that it may create new barriers for them.
We don't want this to become some long-term thing that could be used against people in the long term when the health situation has changed. It should therefore be very time-limited and very circumstance-specific.
Exactly what the passport program may look like in Ontario isn't known yet. Advocates hoping it won't be another reason some people will be left on the street. John Woodward, CTV News.
Also tonight, double jeopardy for the short-lived host of America's favorite quiz show. Another major shakeup has just been announced with a brand new season just 2 weeks away.
On air. Online, on every platform.
A story you'll only see here.
CTV News Toronto, winner of the RTDNA Award for Best Breaking News.
Another record has been broken.
Watch weeknights at 6.
For students preparing to return to class, there is so much to think about.
And for many, academics are already top of mind. CTV's Beth McDonnell reports.
As summer comes to a close, Chloe Blazer and Mars Parsons are a little apprehensive about going back to school.
I kind of feel a little bit unprepared. It's been really difficult, like missing a whole grade 8 and stuff, and that was really special to me.
Kind of nervous going into grade 8. I think some of the material I didn't really learn.
The friends are not alone in likely experiencing some level of learning loss due to pandemic disruptions.
It's not going to be equal.
School and clinical psychologist Todd Cunningham says the amount of learning loss depends how long a child spent learning online and if they receive support. He's most concerned about students who couldn't engage online and says educators can figure out who in the class may need the most help in the most important areas, reading, writing, and math skills, then focus on bringing them up to speed.
Grade 1, grade 2, we're more concerned about the development of those literacy skills to get those going. In the high school, what we're really concerned about is more of the curriculum, the content knowledge, especially in the areas of mathematics and sciences that may have been missed due to the disruptions. And then students in the middle are kind of a mixture of the two.
The Ontario government says it's investing $85 million to help students recover from learning loss, more than two-thirds directed to summer education. The Toronto District School Board's pandemic recovery plan includes a focus on building relationships and enhancing belonging, play, skills, and knowledge gained during the pandemic, and differentiated supports for those most impacted by the pandemic. Cunningham says it's important to take some time for students to get back into routines, then get down to business, whether it's morning messages or exams, and pay attention to mental health needs.
I'm looking forward to seeing one of my friends.
Above academics, that's what this mom worries about when it comes to her daughter, Maya, going into senior kindergarten.
And we had a lot of anxiety issues, especially towards the end of the school year last year.
She believes a steady and smooth school year will provide the best opportunity for learning. Beth McDonnell, CTV News.
The Royal Ontario Museum will showcase two exhibitions this fall focusing on the pandemic. On September 18th, the ROM will unveil a collection of more than 100 masks made by creators across the globe. They'll include about 40 crafted in Canada. And on October 9th, works of art by young Ontarians will debut. It's intended to show what the pandemic looks like through the eyes of a child.
He stepped down as the show's new host earlier this month. Now Mike Richards is out as executive producer of Jeopardy. Richards received backlash over disparaging and sexist comments he made in the past. Sony Pictures Television said today it had hoped that when he resigned as host, it would have calmed the waters, but it did not. Richards is also giving up his producing duties at Wheel of Fortune.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Last Man's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
CTV Tonight. Need a break? We've got you covered with a full night of great shows. It all starts at 7 tonight, right here on CTV.
I don't know why Doug Ford is yet again laid off the mark. I mean, they should have had a plan in place already.
Updating our top stories, it is still unclear when the province will unveil its vaccine passport. Sources tell CTV News an initial proposal was rejected by the premier, who was concerned about how far-reaching it would be.
We want to ascertain how many cases there are as quickly as possible so that we can contain the outbreaks.
Seven COVID-19 cases have been linked to two youth basketball tournaments held in Oshawa this month. Durham's top doctor says protocols were not followed, including screening, masking, and contact tracing.
It was determined that there was two groups that had exchanged rounds and exchanged shots between them.
A man and a woman now face multiple weapons-related charges in connection with Sunday afternoon's shooting at Yorkdale. Police allege they engaged in a gunfight with a group of three males. A 21-year-old man has already been arrested. And remember to follow us on social media and keep up to date day and night through our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. And if you have a news tip, photos, or video of breaking news, let us know. Returning to the federal election campaign, and housing affordability is always a hot topic of discussion in Toronto.
CB24 Tonight is diving into that issue this evening, and we're joined by Stephanie Smythe. And Stephanie, you'll have exclusive results of a new Nanos research poll that shows just how important it is to GTA voters.
That is right. Like, political parties, listen up. That is still a huge issue. In fact, it's number one, unprompted, in this latest research from Nanos Research. And so we're going to speak with Nick Nanos about the poll. We'll dive into a few of the issues, of course, including housing affordability, coming up on CB24 tonight.
And as we await a decision on these vaccine passports, Steph, you'll be talking to the president of the Canadian Medical Association, who has some concerns.
That's right. You know, they're very concerned about what they call a patchwork of vaccine certificates across the country. They're really looking for something that is nationwide, that's not confusing, that's consistent. So we'll speak with the president of the CMA about that. But also, now we're joined by the president of the OMA, the Ontario Medical Association. We'll get their take on the situation, what they hope to hear from the province when they finally make this decision, coming up, we expect, this week.
Thank you, Stephanie. Have a good show.
Welcome. Thank you.
And CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
In business, the economic recovery is coming under pressure in Canada. Greg Bunnell of BNN Bloomberg with the details.
Hello. Canada's cooling housing market is weighing on the economy. Economic growth went into reverse in the spring as home sales came off their frenzied pandemic peak. And that weakness in real estate, coupled with a plunge in exports, was a potent double whammy for Canada. The country's GDP shrank by more than 1% in the second quarter, and StatsCan estimates that weakness carried into July. While Canadians are sitting on billions in excess savings, household spending was virtually flat from April through June. The Canadian dollar was down 6 basis points to 79.26 US. American benchmark oil slid 71 cents a barrel to close at 68.50. Alberta's heavy crude, Western Canadian Select, was down 56 cents, settling at 56.03 US. And the TSX Composite Index lost a modest 12 points, closing at 20,583, as financials and tech stocks led the way lower. That's the latest from BNN Bloomberg. I'm Greg Bunnell.
Canada faces a very familiar foe tonight when it goes for gold at the World Women's Hockey Championship.
Johnston. She scores! What a shot!
The Canadians beat Switzerland to move on to the final. Now our team will square off against the United States, which has won 5 consecutive gold medals. Canada hasn't won the tournament since 2012 and is looking for redemption following winning a bronze last time out.
Meanwhile, Canada has added to its medal count at the Paralympic Games in Tokyo. A 20-year-old sprinter from Markham is taking home the bronze. Zachary Gingras posted a personal best time today in the 2:38 men's 400-meter race. The computer science student is making his Paralympic debut. He is expected to also race in the 4x100-meter mixed relay later this week. Canada now has 13 medals.
At Flushing Meadows, another Canadian is through to the second round at the U.S. Open.
Biting and wide, and that last tee was big down the tee.
Love the tee.
He is on fire. Shapovalov on the turn.
Denis Shapovalov cruised to a win over Argentina's Federico Delbonis today. The 7th seed from Richmond Hill had 14 aces and won 90% of first serve points. Vancouver's Vasek Pospisil is playing his first match right now. And 2019 champion Bianca Andreescu will take the court this evening.
Just ahead, his days as a championship-winning Raptor are over, but his feelings for Toronto, now a permanent fixture on his arm. We'll tell you whose new tattoo looks more like a love letter to the city.
Danny Green's love for Toronto is much more than skin deep.
The former Raptor now has a permanent reminder of just how special his time here was. Check out Green's new tattoo. It features various nods to the Raptors, of course, as well as the CN Tower, his number 19, and a maple leaf. The shooting guard only played one season in Toronto, winning the championship in 2019, but he made no secret of his admiration for the city and its fans. Green still has not gotten his championship ring yet. He says he wants to wait so he can share the moment with the fans here in Toronto. Fittingly, the tattoo is designed by a Canadian artist based in Abbotsford, BC.
Wonderful. And the forecast, sunny for many days to come, Michelle.
Yeah, we're really looking at a great forecast, Michelle. Extending into the long weekend, there's a slight risk of some showers as we look at Sunday into Monday, but definitely not a washout. And that's certainly not the case right now as we look at satellite and radar. There's mostly clear skies that we're looking at. Humidex and temperature values looking like this. In Toronto, it's 24 degrees, feeling like 26. So negligible humidity. If you're one of those people that doesn't like things too hot and too humid, this is really the week for you. You're going to enjoy it. As we look ahead to tomorrow, 25 degrees, feeling like 27 with a sun cloud mix, winds out of the northeast, 15 to 20 kilometers an hour. And really overnight tonight, we're looking at a low of 15 degrees. So we're right where we should be at this time of the year. I think a lot of people will enjoy that. Zoraida?
Thank you, Michelle. And be sure to join us later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 tonight begins momentarily on CP24.
For Michelle Jobin and Michelle, and along with Lindsay Morrison and baby Charlie, have a good night. We'll see you at 11:30.
Oh.
I'm Ashley Legasic.
And I'm Catherine DeClercq.
And we make up CTV's newest podcast, Life Unmasked.
We'll bring you everything you need to know about exactly how we're going to return to normal life post-pandemic.
New episodes come out every Thursday morning on iHeartRadio, and they're available on all streaming platforms later in the day.
We hope you'll tune in.